Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
The stupid. That is 45% of the undecideds, John. They are the swingest of the swing voters. And they, as they always do, will decide this election.
And it's a fascinating thing. Now, how do you break down the stupids?
Well, ironically, it's a rather complex demographic. You've got your paste eaters, your numbskulls, your nitwits, your f-tards. People whose head gets stuck in jars when they eat pickles. That's a surprisingly large component. People who lose arguments to babies. Douche nozzles, tiger petters.
Now, I don't mean to interrupt. I'm not familiar with all the lingo. Tiger petters.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's people who go into zoos and they pet tigers. Let's push on. People who jump up and down on frozen lakes to check if the ice is strong enough to hold them. Shaved gorillas who've somehow acquired driver's licenses. The voluntarily lobotomized. And finally, Cubs fans.
Cubs fans. Now, they're... Cubs fans are considered a subset of the stupid.
Oh, absolutely, John. I mean, they've had 100 years to figure out that what they want will never happen, yet they still yearn for it.
And that is stupid.
Yes, it's very
because,
stupid.
Because the Cubs will never win.
No, that's right, John. The Chicago Cubs will never, ever win the World Series.
No, they won't.
They won't do it.
They've made God angry.
That's right. That's what I'm saying.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets hard to find, temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. To Mike, it's not just another banana peel, it's future dirt. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And I'm back. I had to just do my little Jimmy Fallon thing there for a second.
Oh, yeah.
I'm back.
I remember that.
Yeah, it's a great bit. It's a radio bit.
I'm back. Nice to see you in the studio, sir.
Well, nice to see you too, Denny.
Yeah.
Or Renner's Roundup guy or whoever the heck you are.
My name's Dennis. But no, we had you at Colatex one week, New York the next week.
That's right. Where in the world is Mike Novak?
I hope to God he stays here in this studio. You were working me to death, buddy. No, it's fine.
I know. Well, hey, listen, first of all, I got to thank you for stepping up last week and helping out because, you know, somebody's got to fly this plane.
Yeah, you know.
You know, and you know,
I don't
want any Malaysian pilots. So.
I don't need money. I don't need food. Mike, all I need is a ding. You're welcome.
You got it. So Dennis was here at the control board spinning the dials. Mm-hmm. Lisa Albrecht was here in studio as well, handling the hosting chores. Kathleen Thompson stepped up, and I appreciate that coming in too. And the best thing that she did was sell the Kickstarter.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
I don't want to do that. You know that it's weird going on the air and saying, hey, give me money. But it's not me, actually. It's the book. It's to get the book published and all the stuff that you have to do to get, you know, because we're based, it's going through Kathleen's publishing company, Around the Block Press. I'm not going to any of those really big fancy schmancies. It's kind of a self-publishing deal, but I still think the book's going to be wonderful. Attack of the Killer Asparagus. And, you know, I even have, hold on.
Uh-oh, he's going to the box.
I'm going to the box. You know, maybe I should do, when I say Attack of the Killer Asparagus, I should do... Get out the old frog that sounds like a cricket. But the Kickstarter is still running, and I have to, you know, we got two more weeks, so you're going to hear about it. It's at that point, and I guess it happens with all these the Kickstarter things, that you stall a little bit, and then at the end there's a big rush. At least that's what I'm hoping for. So we've been stuck at, $28.95 for a couple of days. So I'm thinking, hey, you folks, go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Right on the homepage, you will see the link to the Kickstarter for Attack of the Killer Asparagus. And our goal is to hit 5,000. We've, got 15 days, I think. To do that, so basically 2 weeks, and I do hope you'll help out so that I can get my very first book published. And my thanks again to and Carrie Morris was here last week too. So we had Dennis and I had Lisa, right, Lisa? You have to turn on your mic. Hello, 3, 2, 1. Denny. Lisa doesn't know how to turn on her bike.
There we go. I didn't know where the button was. I'm in a whole new room.
Well, you got to get in the little booth. Thank you last week for stepping up.
Yeah, we had a good time. I don't know if
you guys sounded great. In fact, I had people have been telling me all week, wow, Lisa sounded really good.
That's kind, because it was off the rails most of the time.
No, it wasn't.
I got a little discombobulated to start off, and then we kind of played catch up in the middle.
so that's different how about this show?
Well, we ramble in the beginning with some direction, but I just rambled.
Rambling is me specialty. All right, so there you go. And I was thanking Kathleen and Carrie and Dennis, and it was great. And
I because that was something I did not do at the end of the show.
That's, you know, you don't have to do that at every show. You know, you get around to it next week. That's the way it goes. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Everything, it's all good, as they say. So you might, some folks might want to know what happened last week in New York City.
Yeah, we have not talked. I want to hear all about it.
It was fun. It was really a good time. Just so you know, this is a play I wrote. And I hate to, you know. Date myself, but, you know.
Well, you were just in high school, right?
I was in high school in 1986, right, when I wrote this play. And with Alan Meyer. It's called The Signal Season of Dummy Hoy, and it's about a deaf baseball player, and it's based on a true story, and Dummy Hoy really did play from 1888 to 1903, on teams like Cincinnati and Washington, and, he actually played the first year the White Sox were in the major leagues in 1901, and he was part of that championship team. And, you know, how many deaf players do you see in the major leagues today? So it tells you something. But then, you know, well, don't even get me started on how long it took to get the black players back into baseball, because they did play in the 1880s. And then, unfortunately, a guy named Cap Anson, who was with the club that became the Chicago Cubs, was a guy who put the color barrier up.
Oh, so that's why God's mad at them.
Partly, I think so. Yeah, and of course I had to play my opening, which I always play before elections, the John Stewart talking about stupid voters, because we have an election on Tuesday, and we've had I hope our voters aren't stupid, but you know what? What's stupid about the voters in primaries and in off years is that they don't show up. That's stupid. Mm-hmm. If you're listening to me and you intend not to vote, you're stupid. Okay? You are. You really are. And I really don't even want to talk to you. Don't even want to know you. So, that, you know, this is as I get older, I get crankier. But getting back to New York, so we there was a festival called Real Abilities, and it's actually a film festival for people with disabilities. But they also did some live stuff, including a scene, several scenes from my play, which is in rehearsal and which will open the 3rd of April. The New York Deaf Theater is producing it, and I can't wait to see it. The cast is excellent. It's going to be a really, really good production. And it's weird because it's this thing I did 28 years ago in a different part of my life. My life is very different. I don't really do a lot of theater anymore. I occasionally get back on stage. At the time, I was running a theater company in Chicago and writing and directing and acting and plays, you know, don't really do that much anymore. And so to have this happen, all these memories come flooding back. It's odd. I don't know how often that happens to other people where something they did that long ago springs up and becomes part of their current life. So that is that. And it was fun. It was really good. Like I said, the cast is excellent. The director is wonderful, and they're going to do a great job.
So will you be going back?
I'm going back. I'm not going to take another Sunday off. I'm going to go back during the week to see at least one show, maybe a couple.
Great.
Just to see how well they pull it all together. It ain't the easiest play in the world either. I got to tell you, we made it difficult for actors and directors. But if you do it right, it's really moving. I'm very proud that they're doing that. Okay, on the show today, well, we're going to start with a blast from the past. You guys won't recognize her as a blast from the past, but she is for me. Her name is Miriam Goldberger, and she's written a book called Taming Wildflowers, and that will be in the Green Room segment. And she's a blast from the past because she's with Wildflower Farm, and which is in Toronto, or actually, yeah, Toronto Way, Ontario. They are the people who do EcoLawn, and EcoLawn was a sponsor on the show several years back. It's still out there, still a great product, but Miriam's written a book now, and I'm happy to have her, and she'll be on in just a couple of seconds to talk about that. Second hour, among the things going on this week is the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, which opened yesterday, and Miriam will be speaking there. We'll talk about that, but also another person who's presenting at the Flower Show is Kathy McGlynn from the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership. She's been on the show before. So she's I love the idea of going to the Flower Show and talking to people and saying, well, I'm going to tell you which invasives are out there. While you're enjoying these beautiful flowers, I will teach you what you should not plant and what you should be on the lookout for. So that's what she's doing. She's doing a presentation about the benefit of native plants and also the scourge of exotic invasives. And then in the second hour also, Lisa, it's you and me. There's a great deal of the second hour. It's just going to be whatever. So get out your phones, get out your tweets, get out your Facebook posts. 773-763-9278 is the telephone number. 773-763-9278. And I'm going to kind of open it up to whatever folks want to talk about, and we'll see what happens. So coming up next, Miriam Goldberger, Taming Wildflowers.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up? Trouble breathing? Headaches? Sinus pressure? You're tired? Congested? Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it? You make it work for you.
You see, this is the perfect music to play as I bring in Miriam Goldberger. Because she's my girlfriend. And Jeffrey Sweet says the same thing. Miriam Goldberger, good morning.
Good morning to you, Mike.
How are you?
I am so good.
Now, are you in the wilds of Ontario this morning?
I am not only in the wilds of Ontario. I am in the very thick of the Canada Blooms experience. I am in Toronto, and this is their big 9-day event all about flowers and gardening and landscaping. Yeah, and I've been speaking here and basically camping out here.
And notice, folks, that she says a boot, which is but you're not even from there originally.
I have been living in Canada for 33 years now. I married a Canadian, but I'm from New Jersey.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny. I was in New York last Sunday in Manhattan, and my friend Alan has a place in Washington Heights. So we are right opposite the George Washington Bridge, and every time we went by it, all I could think of is the craziness going on. I mean, you know, you could look across and see Fort Lee on the other side, and all I can think of is Chris Christie and his and all that nonsense going on.
Nothing to do with that.
I didn't. Well, you got out of there 30 years ago.
That's it. He was just a babe in arms back then.
So, is it to succeed in business in Canada? Do you have to start saying aboot?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
Otherwise, you're just a carpetbagger there, you know?
That's it. You know, and you have to be a little bit more laid back, and you have to be nicer. We're the kinder, gentler nation here.
Sometimes,
well,
you know,
things have changed. Things have changed. Our leaders are not necessarily going with the same agenda that you and I would prefer.
Yeah, you know, you got those crazy conservatives there too, and you know, pumping all that tar sands oil into the United States. That's not doing us any favors.
That's true, but again, I had nothing to do with that.
You're growing flowers. That's a very different thing.
That's pretty much
thankfully.
It.
No.
Yeah,
thankfully.
Yeah. Right, Lisa. And, of course, Miriam is the author of... When did this book come out, by the way?
Just a few weeks ago, Mike.
Okay, so you're still...
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
She's enjoying the glow, basking in the glow of a new book called Taming Wildflowers. Actually, the subtitle, Bringing the Beauty and Splendor of Nature's Blooms into Your Own Backyard. First of all, congratulations. The book is lovely. And Lisa, if you want to come and grab a copy of this, because what happens on the show is that Lisa always takes a copy from me, and then she flips through it while I'm talking to the authors, and then she comes on and goes, oh, my God, that's so amazing. So we'll...
Wait for it.
Exactly. You have to wait a few minutes to wait for it. But she will be there. One of the things I've noticed right at the outset, and it's a guy who's publishing his own book right now. You've gotten high praise from some very fancy people. The blurbs. I like Pete Udolf. That's amazing. He's the guy who designed the Lurie Garden in Millennium Park here in Chicago. And so
he sure did. And he's done incredible gardens in New York and in Toronto and throughout the world. And he's a real leader in appreciating all the phases of plants and nature as a prime aesthetic element in the landscape. And he just loves wildflowers. I mean, I didn't approach him. He heard about the book through a friend of mine who is a friend of his, and he contacted me.
Wow.
yeah, that was beyond thrilling, actually.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's great. That is so cool. By the way, our mutual friend, Annie Haven, has posted on Facebook this morning, says that we're going wild.
Yes. Yeah.
That's okay.
She knows both of us, so I think that, you know, she can pretty well assess the situation.
So shout out to Annie out in California. Oh, and I have to tell you one more thing. Since you're in Toronto, we had a dusting of snow last night. It's Mother Nature's way of saying, I can do this whenever I want. You know, we've had so much snow this year. We're getting close to the all-time record, and I'll talk to Rick DeMaio about that when I'm done talking to you, Miriam, but it just won't stop. I don't know what's, you know, you expect that in Toronto, I imagine.
Well, Toronto has had a serious, you know, whip in with the weather as well. Up where I am, my wildflower farm is about an hour and a half north of the city, and it snowed this morning again, says Canadian Hubby.
Wow.
Yeah,
and that's what we got. That's probably the same system that sort of waltzed through here last night and didn't leave enough snow to really do any damage, but just enough to say, yep, I can do this anytime I want.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even I'm complaining.
Yeah.
I haven't complained.
I am the last person. I am still holding out. I'm not complaining. I'm just rolling with it. I don't care.
I'm submitting your sainthood papers then.
I don't care. I just don't care.
Well, I ran out of the house without a coat yesterday, so that was my own fault because by 9 o'clock and then it was snowing. I was like, really? What an idiot I am. It's March.
Yeah, but you know what? And this is a gardening show, so the good part about all the snow is the excellent quality of snow cover. So that part is really good.
Now, we lost all of ours in Chicago, and a friend of mine posted that her crocuses are peeking out.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast. In the last couple of days, I've got shoots coming up out of the ground. Yep.
You have no right to complain whatsoever.
Well,
come on.
We
just
had
Wildflower Farm. We still have 5 feet of snow.
2 years ago, it was 85, all right, in March. For a week, it's just shows you how variable the weather can be. But nah, you know, I got a couple of little shoots coming up, but nothing to write home about yet.
It's still enviable.
Yeah. Well,
say congratulations.
Yeah, I'll accept that. So you, of course, are the one of the chief cooks and bottle washers at Wildflower Farm, which is a place that you started in the 80s, what, 88, something like that?
That is correct.
What's interesting about your story, because you're writing about wildflowers here, but you didn't start as a wildflower venture, did you?
No, and in fact, it's really important to say right out of the gate that I am not a purist. I'm not an extremist. I don't think everyone should only grow wildflowers. My point of view and the basic premise of the book is that wildflowers should be incorporated into every single kind of garden, every single public and private landscape, because the pollinators need them and they happen to be extremely beautiful and make great cut flowers. But no, I didn't start out growing wildflowers at all. I started Canada's first pick your own flower farm back in the 80s, and I just started getting into wildflowers because I needed low maintenance perennial beds that were really for show pieces that I didn't have to, you know, do a lot of work with, and so research pre Google and pre interweb books. Remember books?
Yeah.
Indicated that wildflowers would be a good idea. So I started growing wildflowers from seed, and people started asking, well, this is a very nice garden you've got here. You know, can you landscape a garden filled with wildflowers for me? And I'd say, no, I don't do that. And then they'd say, well, can you at least sell me the plants? And I'd say, no, I don't do that. And this lasted for several years till it penetrated my thick skull that perhaps there was an opportunity here, that they know there was a demand. And so we started growing wildflowers, native grass plants, and doing wildflower landscaping. And eventually the business became what it is now, which is one of North America's largest wildflower seed suppliers. We grow. We have a 100-acre wildflower farm. It's very unpleasant and stressful. All those wildflowers, people come there to stress out, and then they go back to the city to relax. And you know, but anyways. So we have all this acreage, and we grow and we harvest and we clean and we package wildflower species, individual species, as well as genuine for real wildflower meadow mixes, not this kind of scam in the can, pretty picture on the package, doesn't really work and doesn't really contain wildflowers. We do the real deal.
Let's stop there for a second, because I'm so glad you brought that up, because I get asked about that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you call them scam in the can?
Well, most North Americans still think that, you know, you can put on like a lovely morning coat, throw some Vivaldi on, put a frilly dress on, and just sort of scatter seeds, as you skip merrily outside, and that's all that there is to it. And that doesn't work at all. And most people think, when they think of meadows, they think of English meadows. I mean, if you happen to be Prince Charles, then that works for you in that environment with those weather conditions, with that type of soil, with the amount of moisture they have over there. But the wildflowers that are here, the ones that were here for tens of thousands of years before European settlement, they are not those plants, those seeds that go in those commercial meadow mixes.
What are they putting in those mixes, and why don't they work?
Well, they're putting in a lot of European annuals, and they're putting in a lot of seeds that actually are invasive aliens. And
give me some examples.
Okay, like people love Dame's Rocket.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the Latin on it this morning, but it's very pretty, and who wouldn't fall in love with it in theory? It's just very pretty, but it happens to be in certain parts of North America actually an aggressive invasive plant.
Yeah,
and so that's just one example. Or another important difference between a real meadow, and there are a couple of key ones, but another one I'll talk about is the fact that, like, in a real meadow, you just seed it once, and it lasts for 75, 100 years. The oldest man-made meadow grown from seed is actually at the University of Wisconsin Arboretum. It's the Curtis Prairie Meadow, and it's, I think, It's definitely in its eighth decade, so it's in its 80s, and it's still going strong. The maintenance, is like one day a year or something like that. It's fantastic. And then another key element is that a real meadow combines wildflowers and native grasses, and that's because the wide fibrous roots of the grasses and the vertical roots of the flowers, they cinch together and they create this impenetrable web, and over time it means no weeds can get in, and it holds moisture better. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful closed, long-lived system. Not to even mention the fact that wildflowers developed over tens of thousands of years and co-evolved with all the pollinators, and that's a really key piece, is the pollinators, the ecosystems, the food web, the soil web, and what wildflowers bring to the planet in terms of the eco services that that they provide. And so when I wrote the book, my one of my goals was to bring this information to people who normally may not even know that these are important issues.
Mm-hmm.
And basically lure people in with lots and lots of very beautiful pictures.
Well, you've got a lot of great pictures here. And one of the things that Miriam does that's very cool is not to overload you with too many plants, just enough. There's about 60 of your favorites there. And, mm-hmm. and anybody thinks, you know, hard, they'll think, yeah, 60s, I can probably handle that number, because sometimes you get these books and there's hundreds and hundreds and you have no idea where to start. And you go with some of the more famous plants. And you even have sections on milkweed, which is very cool. And blazing star. And that's the other thing I have to ask, because you tend to gravitate towards common names rather than the Latin names. For instance, you call them wildflowers when really we're talking about, some people would say, native plants. Why do you use the term wildflowers?
Well, I think that my own experience with the word or words wildflowers is a good example. When we started our business back in 1988, we called the business Wildflower Farm just because it sounded romantic. It sounded lovely. And we weren't really growing wildflowers at all. But I think that more people respond to that word, that term, than the things that are academically correct. I wanted this book to be a populist guide for all kinds of people, and a gateway to a lot of information, a lot of beauty, and that's why I have also in there all kinds of information about using wildflowers as fresh cut flowers and dried flowers, and extending wildflowers into being used as flowers for DIY wildflower weddings, for green weddings. And so there's a human interest angle to all of that. I mean, and these things that appeal to me too, as a human being. I wanted to make the book, you know, really accessible.
And to be sure, you do have the Latin names there, so you're not going to you're not hanging people out to dry by saying sunflower. No. You know, those names are there, but You don't hammer people with that. It's there for their information if they want it. By the way, Dame's Rocket is Hesperus matronalis. Or matronalis, however you pronounce it.
Yep.
I'm on the National Park Service site, and if you look at it, it's this beautiful purple flower, and you know, as you said, people love that. But the National Park Service writes, do not purchase or plant this species. They say it in so many words.
Mm-hmm.
Individual plants can be pulled by hand if soil is moist, or dug up using a spade or shovel to loosen, and they go on and on about that, and then they have, you know, the alternatives, native alternatives that you might want to use. Some of them are in your book, like oxeye sunflower, Heliopsis helianthoids. So there's
exactly.
So,
and there is, I might add, in addition to the Latin being there, there's also something that I have seen no other wildflower book do, which is I have pictures of the seedlings.
And that's where I wanted to go.
Right on.
Yes. So, okay. So I did think that if I wanted to plant, I needed to get one of the, you know, big things full of mixed seeds and just throw it out there. But I didn't. So now I'm confused, because in the book, you clearly point out, you know, that you are actually growing from seeds. So are you transplanting? Are you growing in, you know, because I see some pictures here for some indoor things. So are you actually going out into a meadow and then putting it down, so you're not spreading seeds everywhere? You're actually doing it on purpose.
Well, this book is not really about how to grow a meadow. It is about how to grow individual plants.
Okay.
But you do have you do talk about that a little bit. You have a little bit about meadow and what you might want to accomplish in a meadow. So even you even touch on that.
I do touch upon that. And then if you go to the Wildflower Farm website, which is just wildflowerfarm.com, there's a huge amount of excellent specific information on the step-by-step process to actually grow a meadow from seed. But I get into growing individual seeds, wildflower seeds. There's a whole chapter called Making Babies, and it's all about winter sowing and cold moist stratification and, you know, which wildflowers need it and which ones don't and how to do it. It's not hard. I mean, the whole of having wildflower plants or having wildflower gardens or meadows is not a difficult process, but it is different from traditional landscaping.
By the way, we're talking to Miriam Goldberger. She is the author of Taming Wildflowers. And you can go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. You can click on the link and find out more about the book and how to purchase it. It's from St. Lynn's Press. Nice, lovely hardcover book. I see now. I'm starting to get geeky on you because I'm thinking, are we gonna go hardcover with mine or you know, paperback? How does that work? How do you make those decisions? But you do have wonderful stuff in here, like how to plant the seeds, which is great. You even do a thing that I have never seen before in a book. Well, two things. One that I'm sure has been in other books, but you talk about how to put wildflowers in a vase because people, I think, are under the misapprehension that it doesn't work to use wildflowers in displays.
That's correct. That's correct. And this is something I've been studying for many, many years. In fact, I've done intensive workshops for the Perennial Plant Association on exactly this.
And your arrangements are just stunning. I mean, I feel like I could even do this.
Well, that's the beauty of wildflowers. They make incredible fresh arrangements. And, I mean, the you can't go wrong. And that's part of what I try and teach in the DIY workshops that I do and when I was working with the brides that I did the book with.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say. The last chapter is about weddings. Now, I'm not a big wedding guy, okay? I will admit that. But you talk about doing corsages and boutonnieres and arrangements for weddings, and I think that is going to attract some people who are going to want to pick this up and get some ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, what I'm really doing is kind of a number of things simultaneously. I'm encouraging people to work with wildflowers, to grow them, to design with them, to bring them into their home, to incorporate them in the rituals of their wedding. And I'm also trying to give people permission to understand that it's not a difficult thing to do. And you kind of can't go wrong. And I love the fact that with the brides that I was working with, for example, they really got it. You know, they said, you know, now that we've gone through this process, I love knowing about all the wildflowers that I see when I go for a walk or when I go to my you know go out to the country or whatever. And these are important connections, really important connections. And I mean, wildflowers are really, they were the first flowers, and they were the only flowers for most of the time this planet has been in existence. And human beings have emotional relationships with wildflowers. And in fact, physically, we wouldn't exist without wildflowers. Wildflowers do so many important jobs, and some of them are emotional, some of them are ecological, and I really wanted to give wildflowers the attention that they deserve.
Well, before I let you go, Miriam, I have to talk about one other thing, and I mentioned it earlier today, and that is Wildflower Farm sells EcoLawn, which, and you were a sponsor on this show for a while. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the interest of transparency, one of the things you told me, and one of the reasons that you stopped advertising here is that you said the Midwest doesn't seem to be ready for a natural lawn. Mm-hmm. And I find it kind of discouraging. And I think you're right, actually, because I look at the lack of natural lawn care providers in the Chicago area. People ask me, where can I get a natural lawn care in the area? And I say, there's not a lot. It really isn't. And I, you know, 10 years ago, I thought it was going to be an industry. It was going to just spring up and go great guns. And I think it's because people are married to their old ideas about what a lawn is, and we can't shake it. You know, I want to whoop them upside the head with a rolled up newspaper and say, you got to get out of that mindset, you know, with the chemicals and the Kentucky bluegrass and the craziness.
Yeah, you know, it's a fascinating topic, you know, in terms of the economics, the environmental issues, the social behaviors and the social pressures, and there are many different reasons why, for some reason or other, the Midwest is stodgy on this. I would have to say that more than anything, after all the years that I've been involved in this, and there are eco lawns in every single state, mm-hmm. United States, and every single province, and eco lawn is now a huge part of one of the largest, in fact the largest, hardware store chain in Canada, and more people are very familiar with it in Canada, but again, we have some fairly progressive anti-pesticide bylaws here,
which I love. I mean, you guys have passed the laws against what we call cosmetic pesticides, and the idea of a cosmetic pesticide is you got a dandelion in the corner of your lawn and you're spraying the whole thing with 2,4-D and other, by the way, weed and feed, folks, that's just another name for poison and fertilizer. You should understand that when you're using...
Exactly. Well, see, the real reason that most North Americans are still entrenched in traditional lawn behaviors and expenses is because lawn is basically an entire marketing industry. People do not approach lawn the way they approach other products as consumers. They've been sold a huge amount of misinformation and a huge amount of behaviors that they feel they are told are necessary, which in fact are utterly bogus and are really simply designed to sell products. The quality of most lawn seed is really inferior. It's old. It's repackaged. It's filled with weeds. And the whole idea of covering seeds, you know, that they're marketing as, oh, this is actually a fertilizer. This is really good for you. All it really is. A way to sell you half the quantity of seed at the same price, so you're getting half at the same price you were paying for a full bag of seed, you know, in terms of the large company that does most of this lawn marketing, and it has half the coverage. And it really doesn't have any great value as a fertilizer, and it does nothing to really enhance the organic quality of the soil. And most people are still growing very shallow-rooted sod-style lawns, whereas the eco lawn, which is seven different fine fescues, has deep roots that go down 9 to 14 inches. Fine fescues, I maintain, are the best-kept secret in the lawn care and lawn seed industry because they are legitimately... a godsend in terms of the way they operate. You mow them once a month. You can grow them in the sun. You can grow them in the shade. You can grow them under pine trees. They have fine blades that are easy to mow, but wonderful to walk on.
Yeah.
They don't need great quality. So it's something that that, you know, I am passionate about because it is. There's so many lawns. I mean, like 80% of North America is covered in lawns.
I know, and if we're going to do that, we got to do it smarter, and we're not doing it smart right now. So, I highly recommend Eco Lawn. It's ECO-LAWN.
ECO.
ECO, rather. I know how to spell, don't I?
Yes.
Eco-Lawn. And you can go to Wildflower Farm and find out more about that. And I also highly recommend Taming Wildflowers. Miriam, wonderful book. Congratulations on that. And I hope folks will go to my site, mikenovak.net, and find out more about the book. But you also have have a website, which is tamingwildflowers.com. So you can do either. And you're speaking next week on Friday at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show.
Yes, in the afternoon at 2 o'clock. I'm very excited to be there.
So, folks, go on by. Get a book. I imagine you'll have books with you, right?
Yes, there will be books for sale.
There's a good reason to go on Friday. Miriam, wonderful talking to you. I hope we hook up the... Oh, well, yeah, we're going to see each other on Thursday.
Yes.
All right, fabulous. Thanks so much for being on the show, and I'll see you then.
Oh, thank you so much, Mike. Take care. We'll see you soon.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In the Green Room.
You dig.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-LUNG-LAW. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
Do you have your CSA share from Purple Leaf Farms yet? Now, it might seem that I'm being pushy about it, but you do know that if you sign up with Purple Leaf Farms now, you're guaranteeing that you'll receive a summer's worth of weekly shipments of fresh produce. If you're not familiar with the concept, CSA stands for Community Supported Agriculture. You pay up front, and in late June or early July, you begin receiving weekly shipments of produce that are fresher than fresh. Purple Leaf Farms is run by a friend of the show, Jessica Rinks, and she grows, and she was singing last night, and I had to miss it. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to see that. That was at the Hideout. I wonder how that went. She grows vegetables, herbs, and cut flowers using organic methods. No synthetic chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, or synthetic fertilizer. You'll receive 6 types of vegetables, 2 types of herbs, and 1 large mixed flower bouquet every week for 15 weeks. As far as I'm concerned, the flowers are the best part. Please consider a CSA from Purple Leaf Farms. You will not be disappointed. Sign up today. For more information, go to purpleleaffarms.com or call 312-437-7542. 312-437-7542. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. As I said in the second hour, we're going to have a little time to discuss whatever. Feel free to call us 773-763-9278. Right now we go to the man. I missed you last week, Rick DeMaio.
You missed me because you weren't here. Is that the reason?
No, because I'm a weather junkie and I need my private forecast. I missed having that.
I see. So you didn't get your fix, is what you're saying.
I didn't get my fix. No, I didn't.
I did.
Lisa and I and Kathleen had a good time talking about the weather, and we talked about the fact that we had a chance of getting another snow event in here, albeit a little bit weaker than I thought, that the system actually moved a little bit further north, and then we ended up having no snow in northern McHenry County and 3.5 inches at O'Hare Field and then 6 at Midway and almost 8 inches far south. And now we're sitting at 79.3 for the season at O'Hare, making it the third snowiest. But amazingly, Midway is now up to 85 inches. And if you put Midway into the official set of record numbers, they're actually at their second snowiest of all time. And here we are on a Sunday morning, kind of reflecting on, the St. Patrick's Day weekend of 2012. We had temperatures in the 80s, and it's a balmy 16 degrees with a 30-mile-an-hour wind. We're going, what is up with the weather? Or what is down with the weather?
Yeah, I guess. Well, it just shows the variability right now, doesn't it?
But But this, Mike, this is a really cold day. I mean, 20 degrees, 25 degrees is one thing, but I mean, I don't know if you stepped outside this morning, and you probably haven't been outside in the last, you know, hour because you're inside the studio, but it's probably about 5 degrees colder than it was even at 8 o'clock this morning. I mean, this is bordering on ridiculous at this point. I mean, watching icebergs break up on Lake Michigan, and we're a week away from spring. This is pretty severe. This is getting a little bit ridiculous, even for me.
See, that's what I said. I said, I'm even complaining.
I'm the only guy who doesn't care. I don't know what it is about me this year.
Excuse me.
I'm just like, okay, whatever. Just throw it at me.
I feel like at one point you were complaining about shoveling.
No, not really. Because I pay a guy to do it occasionally, so I don't have to worry about that.
Well, I think, Lisa, what Mike is saying is he loves how nature has a profound impact on the ability for people to go about their normal daily lives. And it still shows that the earth is a very important thing, and we have to respect it. And if we don't, it'll eventually bite us in the you-know-where.
I will say.
Like what Mike's thinking, right?
Yeah, it has a lot to do with it.
I missed the cold during the snow on Tuesday because I was like, wow, if we had been in the 30s getting snow, it was heavy snow. I missed that light, fluffy stuff at 0 degrees.
Right.
But we got some last. I mean, that was the other thing I said at the top of the show, Rick. I walked out this morning and there's this really light layer of snow as if Mother Nature is just saying, see, I can do it anytime I want.
Yeah.
When it came down, it was wet.
What's that? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was just really wet snow, though, when it came down.
Not last night.
It was. I was out in it.
Oh, yeah. Really? Was it wet last night? Oh, it's gotten cold then.
It got colder and fluffed up.
Yeah, it was a little bit on the wet side. And oddly enough, I was up in the 96th floor of the Hancock. My brother's in town from New York. So we went up there for a drink. And the top of the Hancock is lit up with, you know, green lights for St. Patrick's Day. And all of a sudden it begins to snow. And either we were doing some sort of flashback from the late 1960s, but all of a sudden the snow is coming down out of the sky and it's green. Everybody's taking pictures of green snow, and it's like, okay, this is getting really, really weird. And someone, I think I heard someone say, wow, the snow is green. I'm like, well, no, the snow is not green. It's being reflected by the green light. But I didn't want to say that. I figured I'd let her get her martini fun out of that particular event.
No, it's the snow is not green, okay?
Yeah, but it was like,
I'm a trained meteorologist, and the snow is not green.
Yeah, Rahm Emanuel has gone one step too far here. reflecting on March 2012, which is, you know, that was really occurring, you know, right at this time. Last year, we were reflecting on the fact that we had such an incredible start to the previous, you know, spring from a standpoint of warmth. And this one is about as reverse as you can get.
Yeah.
So far, 8 degrees below normal for the month, which is actually an improvement because early in the week, the first 12 days of the month were about 13 degrees below normal. But you reflect back on 2012, and March 14th was 81 degrees. March 15th was 81. March 16th was 82. March 17th was 82. And March 18th was 81. So we had 5 consecutive days where the temperature broke a record, 5 consecutive days where the temperature was above 80 degrees, and 5 consecutive days where the temperature was above 80 degrees, and it was still winter. When you put it into that kind of perspective, it blows your mind to think that we had that warm of a March. And the odd thing about it, Mike, you remember this quite well, April was colder than the month of March.
Yes,
that year.
It was.
And it put everything into a funk. Here we are walking around looking at the trees, and they're green. And it wasn't because of St. Patrick's Day, but it was the second week of April, and it's like everything bloomed out. It's like, this is really, really strange. So some of the things that, you know, I think are important to talk about is the amount of snow that we've had. You also have to think about it, and the wetness of the snow that Lisa was referring to on Monday. Even though we had 4 inches of snow to here, still the water content was about 6 to 7 tenths of an inch. And the soil was warm enough where that stuff began to percolate down into the soil. So one of the things that, you know, students have been learning in the last couple of weeks, I always like to teach about the hydrologic cycle this time of the year and evaporation and percolation and infiltration. And, Mike, I don't know if you talked about it, but there's a huge seminar conference taking place at Loyola University sponsored by the Institute of Environmental Sustainability coming up this week. It's called Water Week 2014, and the students are learning not so much about rain and snow, but how we hold on to the rainwater, how we make something out of the snow. And then when you put that into a perspective or a framework of California, which has had basically nothing in the last 2 weeks after it had 2 days of, you know, heavy snow, heavy rain, then you really begin to think environmentally sound thinking, forward thinking from a standpoint of how do you keep people happy? How do you keep farmers happy? How do you keep ranchers happy when you don't have the natural resource that they rely on the most, which is the water?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I saw the information you sent me about Water Week, and it looks really, really fascinating, and I'm glad. Is any of that open to the public, or is it just for the students?
I believe it is open to the public. I know that link that I sent you has a lot of information on it, and it's one of these things where I think you can just kind of register, come in, or maybe register for the whole week, or as they've done so successfully at that new program at Loyola. A lot of that stuff is posted online. Now you have these webinars where you can actually watch either a live discussion or a podcast. But I think one of the things that students are learning as is the link between weather and climate. Not so much, I think we've drilled it into people's minds that weather is short-term and climate is long-term, but there's still a huge bridge that connects the two in the short term, and in the seasonal change is how your short term weather affects your short term climate.
Yeah.
But I think we're beginning to realize that the students need to know this. And in this age of, well, it happened last week, it's done and over with, I don't need to think about it, I think they're getting a better appreciation of not only what the short term consequences are, but maybe how to predict, you know, some of the short term consequences of what could happen if something doesn't happen when it's supposed to happen, i.e. in normal winter season or a normal spring season.
All right. Well, you got about a minute for a forecast here.
Yeah. You're stepping outside. You're going down the south side Irish Parade. Last I checked, more Irish whiskey in your coffee does not help. You will be cold if you're not dressed warmly. Wind chill right now is a bone chilling -3. So high today. Well, if we get up to 25, we'll be lucky. Finally calms down tomorrow with a temperature up to about 30, but back into the upper 40s with rain on Tuesday, and then back into windy, cool weather. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all 5 days of the end of the week, generally below normal, and maybe an inch or two of snow still expected before we officially greet spring next weekend, Mike.
Unbelievable. It still happens. Yep. Rick, thank you so much. Pleasure talking to you again. You have a great week. Well,
take care, man.
All right. Bye-bye. Second hour, 773-763-9278 is our telephone number if you want to engage us. I got a couple of things that I want to talk about, and I think Lisa does too. So I hope you stick around for that, and we'll leave it wide open for you.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by Recycle Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
On the city bad scooter searching for his groove.
You can't spend 4 days within sight of Fort Lee and New Jersey and in downtown Manhattan. And we cruised over to Queens and Brooklyn and other places without playing a little of the Boss.
A little Bruce.
Yeah, a little Bruce action there. You know, it's interesting. My yard is starting to respond. As I think we mentioned earlier, it's got little tiny shoots coming up. But I was out there, and one of the things I noticed that the snow had done is matted down everything.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to ask you off the air because I noticed that my soil, never in my life have I noticed compact soil. But now these are things I notice after being on the show.
It's a curse as well as a blessing. Mostly a curse.
When would I start working on that? Obviously, it's too wet now.
It is too wet. If you get out, what I did is I stood on the sidewalk and very gently with my rake move some of, because I let leaves stay on the garden. Okay, because they're going to break down. They're providing nutrients to the soil. It's crazy to clean that all up in the spring or in the fall. And besides, I'm lazy. And then in the spring, I just tease it. I just tease it without walking on it. Because if you do right now, if you walk in your yard and people are going stir crazy because it's been so cold. They're not going to be tempted to today with the cold temperatures, but when we get later in the week, if we happen to get in the 40s and 50s, folks are going to want to get out there and work. Well, there's a lot of moisture in the soil. And if you compact that soil, if you walk on it now, you're going to be paying the price for it for months because that is so hard to undo. One of the tips that I've mentioned before on the show is if you cannot resist, for one thing, do like I did, stand on the sidewalk, but not everybody can do that because not everybody's got, not everybody lives in Logan Square where my yard is very tiny and I can reach across, from the sidewalk and tease the matted down leaves so that there's a little air and things can dry out a little bit and everything isn't smushed down. But you could put a board down and stand on that and distribute your weight. But basically, my advice is leave it alone. Just leave it alone right now unless, you need to get the matted leaves off like I was doing because you're going to do more harm than good.
Well, I wanted to get the sheer garbage.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing is just getting the garbage off.
I don't remember a dirtier winter. Was it just that it all got trapped in the snow? But there is more rubbish in plastic bottles and bags.
Yeah, the city's pretty ugly at this time of year. Yeah. And in my neighborhood in particular, I get a little nutty. I get very frustrated because I just don't understand people who throw that stuff on the street. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
what the hell is wrong with you? That you would open your window and throw a plastic bottle out in the street. Or if you're walking down the street, you just drop it when you're done with it. What is the matter with you? Were you raised in a barn?
Mm-hmm.
And you weren't, obviously, because you're in the city. So, yeah, I don't know what the story is about that. But, so, my word of advice to gardeners who are going stir crazy is plant some seeds indoors. Now, I understand that that's going on today. I got I haven't even looked at the tweets today. Wow. My buddy Tom just donated to Kickstarter.
Oh, nice.
Thank you, Tom. And for all you folks out there, feel free to put your contribution, your backing at Kickstarter. Look for Attack of the Killer Asparagus. Lisa was numero uno on the list 2 weeks ago when we
raced to the front door.
Yeah. I noticed earlier that there was a post from Zan who was going to send us some goodies here, but not really. She was cooking. Okay, now I got to find it. Where is it here? She had some food. She's always cooking during the show, okay? So what? Here we are. She said strawberry cream cheese scones. I could have used a strawberry cream cheese scone this morning. She said if she didn't have
not
to get...
Not too late. There's still an hour left of the show. Hurry.
No, I told her she didn't have to because she said if she didn't have to get ready for the seed starting class at Peterson Garden Project, she'd bring them over. And so I asked her, well, what's that all about? And so she sent me a link about what's going on. It's the Hot Crop Seed Starting Workshop. And she's teaching it. Okay, I didn't realize that. Today from 2 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. It's $15. It says this hands-on class teaches you the essentials of starting seeds for hot crops, meaning tomatoes, eggplant, peppers, herbs, etc., to plant out after the last frost. Lighting, soil, watering, and other techniques will be covered in this hands-on class. We will also address recycling common household products as seed containers to save money, and you'll be able to plant some seeds during the class to take home with you. So that is at the Peterson Garden Project Learning Center, 2 to 3:30 today. It's cold. You're not going to be probably doing a lot outside. You're going stir crazy. Don't work in your garden because you just compact things, and even the top layer is probably frozen again today. But the PGP Learning Center is at 4642 North Francisco Avenue in Chicago. Zan will teach you all about planting seeds, and you'll take some home, and you'll be a lot happier. That's one way to go. I suppose you could also go to the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, which has opened up in Chicago. It opened yesterday, that'll be going on all week. And a lot of great people, like, as we heard earlier, Miriam Goldberger will be speaking there on Friday. My buddy Jennifer Brennan is there this week, and a lot of folks that you're going to learn a lot. I haven't been there yet, I was at the Good Food Festival over the weekend, which was really amazing. Went to a Localicious on...
how was that last night?
It was,
or Friday night?
It was fun.
Yeah?
It's fun. They had a band. And now I'm mad at myself because I had a CD from the band.
Oh, and you didn't bring it.
And I didn't bring it. I was going to play their stuff because they were really cool. Sunny Side Up is the name of the group. And you can go to sunnysideupmusic.com. And if I had played it, you'd want to go there because the stringed instruments, mandolin and guitar and other stuff. And they three of them and they were just fabulous. And I'll bring it in next week. Unfortunately, I was going to do it today and I forgot. So there you go. Oh, we got a phone call pouring in. Did you see that?
Really?
You might want to grab that.
That's my job.
That's your job. You're in the booth. That's what happens. I am the show host. I do other things. Among them, I've noticed that there's a guy named Jeff Biggers, and he writes for a number of organizations, including Al Jazeera and Huffington Post. He's all over the place. And I've been talking to him, and we're going to get him on the show. We haven't nailed down that date yet. But he's covering what he calls the coal rush in Illinois. That's why we got to talk to him, because it seems like it's kind of gotten, it's been under the radar, and he's been calling out Governor Pat Quinn. He writes in the Al Jazeera article that came out just the other day. I'm going to quote from the article here. On March 7th, with the fanfare of an election campaign event, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn and environmental organizations hailed 91 communities in the Prairie State that now purchase 100% of their electricity from renewable energy sources. Quinn said, "This new study confirms that people around the world can look to Illinois as an example of what can be done with renewable energy. Renewable energy benefits everyone from energy customers to Illinois farmers to anyone who breathes our air." Jeff Biggers writes, "That sounds great. And it certainly recognizes grassroots efforts by local communities. Unfortunately, it's only half true." As Biggers writes here, as part of a long-denounced Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde energy policy, the state of Illinois under Quinn, a Democrat who once led anti-strip mining campaigns and swept into office on promises of regulatory reform, carried out a series of mind-boggling machinations this month in favor of coal mining and hydraulic fracking. "What's the matter with Illinois?" writes Biggers. "Why is the state pursuing an incoherent, all-of-the-above energy policy with erratic thrusts reminiscent of recent extreme climate disturbances. And one of the things, and the article goes on for a while, and then, like I said, I'm going to have Biggers on the show to talk about some of this. One of the things going on is involving a group called Peabody Energy. As Biggers writes in the article, to the fury of local farmers and residents battling to save the historic community of Rocky Branch in southern Illinois, not far from where the Peabody Coal Company sank its first coal mine in 1895, out-of-state loggers hired by Peabody moved their clear-cutting equipment onto the most controversial strip mine site in the state in the dead of night, despite earlier violations for logging operations without any state permits. And again, this is Biggers writing. With required state environmental permits still in public comment period, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, the IDNR, on March 12th, hastily issued the mining permit as pre-mining logging tore into the forested Shawnee Hill habitats that include endangered Indiana bats, according to local residents and naturalists. Finally, Biggers writes, Illinois is in the throes of a coal mining rush not seen in nearly a century. According to an SNL energy analysis, released March 6th, coal mining in the Illinois basin has bucked the national trend and continues to soar. Since Quinn took power in 2009, the state has seen mining production increase by nearly 70%.
I believe we're now fourth in the country.
Something like that.
We went from seventh to fourth very rapidly.
And it's,
under the radar, it's not getting
right.
Much
it's really this. But Biggers has been covering this story. And the other thing is, these folks down there, the public comment period isn't over. And the guys are
moving in.
And the people down there are trying to, they know that it's a death sentence for that community once they start strip mining down there. We've got to put some of that up on our Facebook and tweets. I know Jeff has been tweeting, and I want to thank him for that. I don't know if he's listening or not. But he's been putting my handle on the tweets he sends out so that I'm paying attention to that. And I appreciate that. I really do. And we are going to get to this issue in the next few weeks because this is disturbing that it's the coal and the fracking and, you know, who knows what's going to happen with the fracking regulations. The IDNR took public testimony and comment over the holidays, as you remember. They scheduled it over the holidays to make it a little more difficult. Thank you very much. And their proposed rules are absurd. It's almost as if they are counterintelligence. They're sort of a fifth column. You know, under the guise of protecting natural resources in the state, they're actually there simply to exploit them and nothing else, if you look at those rules for fracking in Illinois. So there are, let me find this here, there are various organizations that you can check. And let me find it, because I got to go to my fracking site. To make sure there are, let's see, here we go. There's going to be Frack Free Illinois Lobby Days in Springfield. You can call that up on Facebook. Frack Free Illinois Lobby Days in Springfield. That's Thursday, April 3rd. Fractivists are going down to Springfield to talk some fracking sense into Illinois representatives and senators and to promote what they call, they have a green dozen fracking bills. You can look it up there. And I will be talking about this more in the coming weeks, but, you know, one of the people that I'm going to be having on the show in the next couple of weeks is somebody who's, like I said, I'm going to get Jeff Biggers on at some point, but in a couple of weeks, and I'm checking my calendar just to make sure I got this information right, I'm going to have Carrie Leiterson, who's an environmental reporter. And she is going to talk about some of those issues. That's in 2 weeks. She's written a book also about Rahm Emanuel called Mayor 1%, which I have, which I will read before then. And probably, you know, we'll get into Rahm Emanuel a little bit, I think. Although probably mostly is how he relates to environmental issues. Actually, next week is kind of cool on the show. I wanted to get this out because I have not talked. Two things that I think are just awesome. I'm going to have Doug Tarin, PhD, who's from the Peggy Notobart Nature Museum. He's the curator of biology and vice president of research and conservation. And he's the butterfly guy. He's a butterfly expert. And we know our butterflies are in trouble. Monarchs in particular. We're losing species. We're in the sixth great extinction on the planet Earth. And we're causing it. Human beings are causing it. You know, if it's possible, we could see the monarch disappear in our lifetime, in our lifetimes. That is not an accomplishment, folks.
It feels like it's happening.
It does feel like it. I mean, they might bounce back. Maybe they won't. Maybe it's done. Maybe it's a done deal. Maybe the tipping point's been reached. But we continue. I saw a guy at Good Food Festival yesterday who was speaking on hedgerows. That's all he does. And I want to get him on the show, too. His name is Dave Coulter from Osage, Inc. And he's with the Osage Group. It's osagegroup.com. You want to check into that. And he talks about how, you know, we used to have hedgerows where plants could grow, that native plants and plants that pollinators could take advantage of, and we're wiping them out so we can get a few more bushels of corn. We're losing our biodiversity, and I keep, you know, we've talked about it on the show before, like rivets in an airplane. And when it crashes, don't be surprised. It's that kind of thing. So Doug Tarin is here next week to talk about, I said, I want you to do a report on the state of butterflies. And he will do that. And then in the second hour, something I've never talked about before, which is pretty amazing, light pollution. What are we doing to ourselves with light pollution? I'm going to have Mark Hammergreen, who's an astronomer and director of the Astroscience Workshop at the Adler Planetarium, Audrey Fisher from the Chicago Astronomical Society, and Dr. David Blask, professor of structural and cellular biology at the Department of Structural and Cellular Biology at Tulane, to talk about the effects of rampant light pollution. You know, when I see those things from space where they show the planet and all the lights and everything's lit up, it doesn't make me feel good. It doesn't make me go, wow, is that cool? I think, oh my God, there's no places left on the planet where you can get away from that. And apparently it's not good for us.
No, I know.
It can cause cancer and other things, and it disrupts
stress and disrupts ecosystems.
Disrupts ecosystems, disrupts us as human beings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So next week is going to be a pretty amazing show. I'm really looking forward to that. Okay, we got a couple of calls. Let's go to the phone, 773-763-9278. Chris in Palatine. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Oh, just marvelous. Mike, love to go outside in 10, 20 degrees above zero temperature right now, you know, the day before St. Patrick's Day. And I realize this is about 2 months premature, particularly in a day when it's only 20 degrees. But I'm thinking,
that's okay.
Planning for spring, which may come sometime around the 4th of July or so this year.
That's what I'm thinking.
But I wondered about which is the better way to go economically about hanging baskets. You know, because I've already got the baskets from years past.
Mm-hmm.
I've purchased them at commercial, the large garden centers. And, what I was thinking this year, maybe I want to plant my own. But is it more economical? You know, basically, it's going to cost me less money to go out there and buy the plants myself and plant them, with the baskets I've already got, or go out and buy them from the garden centers already planted?
That's a good question. It depends where you get them. Depends on how big a container you want. And it depends on how good you are at putting together plants that are going to be happy with each other and thrive. I like doing it myself. But some people just, in terms of saving money, you're probably saving a little bit when you do it, especially because you can do more than one container.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy if you buy plants in flats and in the small 4-inch pots, you're probably going to save some money. But for some people, what they're paying for is also the expertise of the people who are putting those containers together, especially at an independent garden center. They have some, some people just want, I'll give you an example. Alsip on the south side. They have, they specialize in their containers and they grow a lot of that material themselves. And they're very proud of that. And people come from all over just to get them because they know they're going to get a very interesting design. And they're, and Pesci's up on the northwest side here, also fabulous containers. I can remember going over there with, Heather Fry. Several years ago, and she was just so thrilled to get that and was very happy to have them make a basket for her. So, Chris, do you feel confident in your ability to group plants together?
No, not really. I mean, I'm just going to basically say, hey, Dan,
yeah, me either.
Looks nice, and I like that one, and I like that one, and I like this one. So, and also I like the fact that when I buy them from a commercial, again, from a garden center, they're also a lot more mature.
Right
off the bat than I can do.
I mean, and those are all good reasons for buying the baskets that are pre-planted for you. And let me just say this, as I always do, because I know Dan Costa's probably listening. Go to your local independent garden center. If you don't do that, we're going to lose them. Pure and simple. We're going to lose them. If you don't, if everybody goes to the box store all the time because they can save a nickel, and you're really not. I mean, look at the variety. You get less variety. You get no help in terms of knowledge. You're kind of stuck with their cookie-cutter approach.
Even in the city, like I'm not far from Gethsemane. Wow. There's nothing like that at Home Depot.
No.
When you go to any of the local garden stores, what they're offering is so superior to the pansies and daisies that end up in the Home Depot baskets compared to the breadth of color that you get at someone local.
So I guess to answer your question, Chris, go buy one.
Yeah, you twisted my arm.
No, really, because and obviously not now. When it's 20 degrees, because they're not going to have it. I mean, that's the other thing that you're going to see. Normally, 2 years ago, when Rick DeMaio was talking about this, 2 years ago, the garden centers were scrambling because
to get started, yeah,
it was suddenly 80 degrees and they didn't have their inventory and they were freaking out. This year, they're probably freaking out because it's so cold.
Still cold.
There's no point in putting inventory out. And as soon as we hit 50, you're going to and actually I'm starting to see a little bit of that sneaking out. I'm sure some places have. I've been out of town for the last week, but I did talk to some people in the industry who said, yeah, it's really strange. We're waiting for the break in the weather to get that stuff out, because you couldn't plant it now in my yard. The ground is still frozen in places.
Yeah, I know. I need a jackhammer to break up the ground.
Yeah. It's all, you're not putting anything in the ground right now. So that's my short answer for you, Chris.
As I'm outside looking at the snow mounds, I don't think I'll be planting till tomorrow.
Probably not.
It's something I'm thinking of. I mean, I'm getting ready. I'm tired of seeing white when I look outside.
I'm the only guy. I think I'm the only guy left in the city. I don't care. It's like, I just don't care. Whatever. Just throw it at me. I'm rolling with it. I'm just, it'll get warm at some point, and then we'll do what we do when things get warm.
Well, I care because we're trying to install solar systems.
Oh, okay. Well, see, and it hurts some people. Yeah, there you go. It doesn't hurt me as much.
We have a business to run.
Yeah, I totally get that.
All right. Well, thanks for the advice.
All right, Chris, you have a great Sunday, all right?
Thank you.
773-763-9278. Holy smoke, it's Amtrak Tim. How you doing, Tim?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, Mike. One garden center you haven't mentioned, I wonder if you could add to your independence. Have you ever looked at ProSax out here in DuPage County?
Looked at what?
ProSax. They're an independent garden center.
No, I have not. I have not. Roger. So now I have to add that to the list. How do you spell that?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. I don't remember. they're in Warrenville off of... they're near the Warrenville Metro Station, near on Prince Crossing Road.
Okay, and what city did you say they're in?
Warrenville.
You got it now?
Yeah, not too far from the place? The first Army Division has got their museum. What's that called?
You're asking me?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
Anyway,
but it's ProSeks, and you can go to prosex.com.
Okay, you already looked it up. Cool.
I'm searching it right now. It's not loading for me very fast, but it'll pop up in a second.
But I want to get back to your coal and you're ragging on the Illinois DNR. And in their defense, I agree with you. We should keep the coal in the ground. But I'd like to say in the Illinois DNR's defense.
Okay.
Have you ever been to Kickapoo, Banner Marsh, or Pyramid State Park?
I can't say I have.
Kickapoo. Those are all reclaimed coal mines. From the Illinois DNR, and they did a pretty awesome job.
All right,
really, really beautiful, really, really beautiful parks. So I'm with you. We should keep the coal in the ground; it'd be better for the environment. But in the Illinois DNR's defense, they've done a really good job at reclaiming land after it's been ripped up to get this carbon out of the ground.
Well, and I think we've talked before a little bit about the bipolar nature of how the ILDNR has been even just set up.
Yeah, they're schizoid, totally schizoid.
You know, it's set up that way legislatively. They almost are in kind of a no-win. In one hand, they need to generate revenue, and then the other hand, they're supposed to be doing... I mean, it's bizarre how they've been organized by design.
It's not the only organization that's like that. I saw that. I got to witness that firsthand when I... I didn't own the property. I owned the house. It's a weird situation on national forest land out in Washington State for a while. It was the national forest. And the national forest, you think of national forest, they're there to protect the forest. No, that's not true.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah.
But they also help facilitate the harvesting of natural resources, which is what DNR does as well. And my feeling is they can't protect and facilitate the harvesting at the same time. It's contradictory. And really, there should be two organizations, but I don't think that that's going to happen.
Yeah, you're basically having the regulator also promote the extraction of resources.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
Bizarre. Exactly.
Anybody who is concerned about getting the Illinois DNR back on track, I just bought my Illinois fishing license. Everybody's got an Illinois fishing license. They're expiring here at the April 1st. So that's one way to get the Illinois DNR money that in a way that does not require them to have to go begging to the coal companies.
I'm sorry. I got distracted there. I'm sorry. Well, what'd you say, Tim?
What I'm saying is that everybody's Illinois fishing license is coming up for renewal here at the end of the month.
Okay.
That's a way for us to get the Illinois DNR money without them having to beg the coal companies or the gas producers.
So you're saying more people should be fishing?
Yeah, especially for Asian carp.
Especially, yes.
Awesome. they make awesome fertilizer.
They,
make
they do. Really good fertilizer. I know that there are companies that have started doing that and using them for fertilizer. I would like to see them fertilized out of existence.
Well, one thing I wanted to talk to your other guests, if we get a guest on, there was the reintroduction of the Illinois DNR. They reintroduced gar, alligator gar, into the Illinois River.
Really?
And I didn't get a chance to ask the question. Yeah, it was a native. It's a native species that we fished out back in the 50s.
Okay. Yeah, we're good at that too. Yeah.
We're good at that. But I was wondering if the reintroduction of alligator gar has had any impact on the carp populations yet. And unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to ask a question. Your guest would have had to go on to another. You went on to another guest.
I asked
about the Asian carp situation. I'd like to, if they could, you know, say what's going on. If there's been any impact from reintroducing alligator gar, I'd be very curious to know.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, the next time we do that, I will check into it. Tim, thank you for calling. Always a pleasure to hear from you.
Talk to you later.
Bye bye. 773. Whoops, I did just the opposite of what I wanted to do there. 773-763-9278. Let's take Marianne, hang on for a second. Let me do some business here, and then we will get back to you with your comment. Assuming that is to say, if I can find, yeah. See, that's my problem. It's like I'm out of control here. Oh, there we are. It would help if I could find the ad copy. That always helps. Now that we're down to the final four or five snowstorms of the season, who knows? A lot of you are planting seeds right now or are preparing to plant them soon. The March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine has a story about a cool way to teach kids about sowing seeds by creating seed tapes, which are strips of biodegradable material with seeds glued to them at proper intervals. Of course, you can buy those tapes, but the story shows you how to make them yourself. Or maybe you have an itch to grow fruit. There's another story. You'll get to meet Illinois Extension Master Gardener Paul Dennis, who over more than 50 years has grown grapes, currants, sea berries, persimmons, gooseberries, blueberries, plums, pears, peaches, apricots, cherries, and hardy kiwi, and he does it in Illinois. Go figure. Then there's my column on the inside back page. If you call me a hardy kiwi, I will probably take it as a compliment. Pick up a copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine at locations all over Chicago. Maybe you'll call me a sea berry. Better yet, get a subscription. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Sometimes the most unappealing plants have a fascinating backstory. D. Landreth Seed Company posted on Facebook this week about tansy, which they describe as the much maligned herb, or herb if you're across the pond. Tansy has been used for medicinal and culinary purposes and as a pesticide for thousands of years. It is a potent herb which, when misused, can cause severe illness and even death. The name Tansy comes from the Greek word I knew I was going to screw this up. All right. Athanasia. Thank you very much. Athanasia, which means immortality. According to Greek myth, it was the key ingredient in the potion given to Ganymede, which made him immortal. Tansy's flowers are sometimes considered immortal because they last for a very long time, and the herb was often used in coffins because it's a powerful insect repellent. The peppery taste of tansy enriches scrambled eggs, omelets, herb butters, and stuffings for poultry and fish. In the garden, it should be grown in a pot buried in the soil to keep it from invading other parts of the garden. One of those guys, huh? There's always a lot to learn from the good folks at Landreth. Check out LandrethSeeds.com or their Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., or call 800-654-2407, 800-654-2407, D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
School, 'cause I am such a fool, and I don't need a single book to teach me how to read. Who needs stupid books? They are for petty crooks, and I will learn by studying the lessons in my dreams. So turn off the TV, 'cause that's what others see.
Yeah. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Lisa, we should probably get Kathy.
Yes.
So she...
Just about to dial her. We had another caller come in.
Okay, and I will take that right now. Go to the phones and talking to Mary Ann. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
Great. How are you doing?
Good. Hey, just wanted to share two things with you. Okay. One, the museum that that a previous caller was talking about is Cantini, which is right on the corner of Roosevelt.
Oh, I know Cantini. Okay, yeah.
Okay, and the second thing I want to share with you was the gentleman who was talking about coal mining in Illinois. Did you know that Illinois holds, unfortunately, the record for the third worst coal mining accident?
No, I did not.
Yeah, in 1909, in a community called Cherry Hill, they, at the time, they had the most modern coal mine where they actually had electricity in the coal mine, but for the lights and everything to help with the safety. But what happened was the electricity had shorted out and they were using kerosene lamps, and some kerosene flaming droppings fell on a hay wagon, which they had hay down in the mine where they would feed the mules that would transport the coal. The coal back and forth, and it caught on fire. And as a result, over 500 miners were trapped. But in the end, half of those were able to get out. So approximately 243 coal miners perished in November of 1909.
I did not know that. That's and I know there was wasn't there a recent one also, like in 2006 or something like that? I don't know if it was here. Maybe it wasn't in Illinois that I'm thinking of. But
yeah, we camp out in Amboy in that area, and we like to do some exploring. And we saw these two huge mounds, and then there was a sign that said the 104th commemoration of the Cherry Hill mine disaster. So I did a little researching, and I found out the information on it. So just to
well, I like the history. Thank you very much, Mary Ann. I appreciate you contributing to the show.
Very good. Well, you have a good day.
You too. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye now.
Bye. 773-763-9278. I'll tell you what. Let's go to the phones and bring in Kathy McGlynn. Kathy, how are you?
Good, Mike. How are you doing?
Okay. You're over at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show.
Yeah, I'm actually sitting in Navy Pier looking out at the lake right now.
I'm kind of surprised you actually have a good cell connection right now, so don't move. All right,
okay.
Do not move. We just never know what's going to happen there. But Kathy is with the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership and has been on the show before. You know, I went to your seminar last fall. Forgetting the name of it. What was that again?
The Invasive Ornamental Symposium and Working Group.
That's it. I knew you'd know because you put it together. That was fascinating stuff. And you managed to bring people together from all kinds of different disciplines, growers and environmentalists and policymakers and scientists, to talk about the plants that are getting out of control. And among them is a plant that a lot of people love, and it's called calorie pear. A lot of people know it as Bradford pear, because you'll see it soon. In the next month or so, it will start to bloom. There's lots of them in the city of Chicago and elsewhere. But as we're finding out, it ends up spreading quite rapidly.
Yes, it will produce fruits that are eaten by birds, and the birds then deposit the seeds in natural areas. So there's some infestations that have been reported in Morton Arboretum areas, as well as the Madewin National Tall Grass Prairie.
Yeah. And there are other plants like that. And part of the problem is that they're still in the industry and they're still sold. We don't move fast enough. Doesn't it seem to you? It seemed from that the conference you had there that I attended that I know the scientists were there and they were saying, well, here are the numbers, and the numbers to me as a layperson added up to trouble. You know, looking at the percentages that would germinate and the percentages that would succeed, I looked at that and I go, that's not a good sign. And that when the industry says, well, we really don't have all the numbers, you know, it's like talking to the people, well, we don't have all the numbers about whether the planet is heating up. You're denying reality. It's time to move on. Get that out of the palate and move on to something else. At least that's the way I feel about it. I don't know if you're allowed to say that, Kathy, but I can because I'm the radio guy, of course.
Oh, I can definitely tell you that economics play a big role in what is able to be regulated and what is not regulated.
Well, of course it does. That's the point.
Yeah.
You know, is that they have inventory and a vested interest in this. And, you know, these plants are still being grown and that costs money and they don't want to just toss them. Even if they're causing harm, they won't toss them.
Yeah, so part of our approach is our compromise has been with green industry is to help do education and outreach to shift the market toward other alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of why I'm making a pitch early in the spring before people make purchases for their gardens.
So
they know what plants to avoid.
Right, and that's a great thing to do, of all places, at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. And so tell me, what is it you plan to do this week?
Well, I'll be giving a talk tomorrow at 11 a.m. about the benefits of native plants. And we're distributing a lot of information about invasive ornamentals. We have newly developed home odor fact sheets we're giving a test run for. They're both in English and Spanish for a number of species. And we'll just be continuing to put the word out through publications and just outreach events. And in addition to that, in May, I'll be doing a series of invasive ornamental plant workshops for the Hispanic community in Waukegan through the Audubon Toyota Together Green Fellowship that we've received. So we're hoping to spread the word in two languages.
That's great. That's great. Now, you're always dealing with two sides of the coin. This week it sounds like you're dealing with the side of the coin, which is, here are plants you should use. But the other side of the coin is, here are plants that are dangerous and you need to, well, dangerous might be a little hyperbolic, but these are plants that are invasive and that you should be on the lookout for. You know, that's an interesting tension there. I mean, like I said, it's the same coin, but, you know, sometimes you're out there saying, don't plant this, and other times you're out there saying, please plant this.
Yeah, and then there's the middle ground where if people are really hesitant to give up some of their favorite plants that are not invasive, we just ask them to start incorporating some natives. So non-invasives and natives are good,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the invasives. So that's something of a compromise we come to with some people.
Well, go through. Let's do a little of both before I let you go. Let's do a little of both, which is, give me some of those plants you really wish people would plant more of that you'll be talking about tomorrow.
Sugar maple, red maple. Really would love to see more of that happening.
Mm-hmm.
I would also love to see more native bittersweet being planted as opposed to Asian bittersweet.
Now that's a really good point, because people, I suspect, only know bittersweet. They don't realize there's even an Asian versus a native bittersweet.
And oftentimes, unfortunately, the plants are misidentified when they purchase them, so folks don't actually know that they're purchasing an invasive.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be problematic, too. So we're encouraging people to make purchases of that plant in the fall when it's in flower and fruit, so they're able to ID it.
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting that you went immediately to trees and shrubs or vines, trees and vines. What kind of native shrubs do you like? I think folks, that is an area where there's the least knowledge. I think there's a lot of ignorance, regarding what kind of shrubs people should put in their landscapes that are natives.
Well, as alternatives for Japanese barberry, I'd recommend little leaf linden or Tilia cordata.
Little leaf linden?
Yeah, little leaf linden's one of the big ones you're recommending. For an alternative for burning bush, I'd recommend red chokeberry or black chokeberry, aronia.
Aronia, yeah, chokeberry, because you can get the red, as you say, or the black. And I think it's important for folks to know that burning bush is one of those plants, like the calorie pear, that we're becoming aware of as being trouble and spreading and crowding out native species.
Yes.
And folks love their burning bushes, don't they?
They really do. They really do, yeah.
And part of it is they love that red color in the fall. You know, the rest of the year, though, it's pretty boring.
It is. And I can't argue with you on that one. they love the foliage. It's like a one-season wonder.
And it is.
Where's a good spot to find this information?
You can actually, right now, our website is under construction, so I will send you the links when everything is working a little better. But I can direct folks to the Midwest Invasive Plant Network, where they can actually download a brochure for the landscape alternatives for invasive plants in the Midwest. Or they can actually go and download a smartphone or Droid app online for the same brochure, which will be updated much more quickly than the printed brochure will be.
And that was the Midwest Invasive Land Network?
Midwest Invasive Plant Network.
Plant Network, okay.
MIPN.org. I'm on there right now. Yeah, that'd be a great place to go. MIPN.org. What would you suggest they look? Oh, see, and there's information right there about Oriental Bittersweet. The database that they have, excuse me.
Yeah, the control database is a really good resource for a lot of homeowners, so I'd highly recommend that.
Great. And it's right there. And they even have news and information. You can do a webinar on being introduced to the MIPN control database. Very cool. So, yeah, I was sort of disappointed. I went there yesterday to your site and realized it was down. You got to get that sucker up there because you're talking to people all week.
I know. We're working on it.
I'll bet you are.
It's a large website, so it's been a bit difficult to translate it over to a new platform.
I think I remember last year you were on the air, and it was a huge website.
Yeah, it's a huge thing.
Yeah, I recall that.
And I'm at the MIPN.org site, Midwest Invasive Plant Network, and one of the things I clicked on was publications, and there's a field guide to invasive plants of the Midwest. There's a pocket naturalist guide to invasive plants of the eastern U.S. Another one, Why Should I Care About Invasive Plants? And then the smartphone app you were talking about. Landscape alternatives for invasive plants of the Midwest. We should pop that one up online, Lisa. That would be a good one. I got to ask you a quick question, though. And we're talking to Kathy McGinnis from the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership. She's going to be at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show again. What time tomorrow?
I'll be giving a talk at 11 a.m. and I'm here most of the week in booth 4:30.
Great. Booth 4:30. Go by, talk to her about this stuff. Say hi. I found out from an acquaintance, colleague recently, as you know, City of Chicago has a list of invasive plants that they put out several years ago. plants that they consider invasive in the city.
Yes.
And this person was trying to find out how that the use or non-use of that was enforced. What's that?
That's a really good question. It's on the books, but because of the Department of Environment does not currently exist, the enforcement is not happening a whole lot.
That was the conclusion she came to. And I find that really disturbing and kind of disappointing. Well, you know, when the Department of the Environment disappeared in the city of Chicago, it sent a real signal as to what was going on in that administration. So we've got this thing, law on the books, and there's no way to enforce it. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Kathy, always a pleasure to have you on the show. I appreciate you stopping in. Have fun at the flower show and spread the gospel of native plants and teach people how to recognize the ones that are not so good.
All right. Thanks very much, Mike.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. It's a Mike Novak show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Now, you've heard this on the show before. Julie Rizzo is on a mission. In 5 years, her company has kept 30 million pounds of granite from ending up in landfills. Now, how did she do it? By creating methods, machinery, and markets to recycle scrap granite. Their recycled granite materials have been featured on DIY and HGTV shows, and their products include recycled granite pavers, split stone tiles, mosaics, and aggregates, and more. In case you're wondering, recycled granite is 3 to 5 times stronger than traditional concrete pavers. And these green products are the only 100% recycled stone tiles and pavers on the market. By the way, since recycled granite materials are manufactured from 100% post-consumer waste, they can earn credit points in the LEED rating system. One more thing. Recycled granite established something called the Green Abilities Program. Individuals with disabilities go through a recycled granite artisan apprentice certification. The program teaches them to specifically work with recycled granite waste. Want to know more? Go to recycledgranite.com. That's RECYCLED granite.com. Or call 800-692-4642. 800-692-4642.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are 2 quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
If you've ever filed a lawsuit, you know that it can be stressful, even traumatic. And if you've been exposed to asbestos, silica dust, or other lung toxins, you're going to need a law firm that can guide you through the legal maze efficiently and effectively. The attorneys of Penn Rakowski are exactly who you're looking for. They view each client and their needs as unique. They're focused on one thing and one thing only, lung disease. And they're based right here in Illinois and Wisconsin. The lawyers at Penn Rakowski have been representing individuals suffering from lung disease and their families for a combined 35 years. And because they're local, they can come to you. They've successfully represented asbestos workers, electricians, carpenters, machinists, and others throughout both states. Contact Penn Rakowski at dustlaw.com or call them toll-free at 888-LUNG-LAW. That's 888-LUNG-LAW. Penn Rakowski, local, committed, caring.
I was going to play music bump, but I had much more interesting thing just happen to me. Matt Cummings, our operations manager, just walked in here, and he brought me mushrooms. And you what? You grew these?
Yeah, they're grown at home. I ordered a kit for my wife for Valentine's Day.
Uh-huh.
I gave her fungus for Valentine's Day. and she we started them about 3 weeks ago, and we harvested
That fast? These are beautiful.
The box. They come in a box.
Are these?
These are portobellos. And I was going to say, let them get bigger, but she started to pick some today because there were too many of them. And so she started, she picked several and realized that there's more coming in below them. So she just picked all the ones that, that were of decent size and let them grow.
I am impressed. I'm impressed.
It's so incredibly simple. You can't imagine how easy it is. They come in a box, and you mix together the topsoil with
Oh, he's got them on his cell phone there too, on the smartphone.
You mix together the topsoil with the.
People take photos of their kids. You take photos of your mushroom, of your fungus. Well, that's thank you.
You're welcome.
For the treat. I can't wait to try these out.
Yeah, they're thick and meaty and and they were picked this morning.
Wow. Awesome. Stay there for just 1 second, Lisa, because this is, you know, we get to the end of the show. You can join us for the very first time. You've never done this with us when we say go green or go green or
go home.
Wait. Oh, Lisa, say it.
Go home.
There we go.